Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me, down here on the south side of town in Rutherford County. Willie D is holding things down in East Nashville. Chase McCabe out on the west side in Bellevue. Marquise Munson, our producer, back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. We've enjoyed our conversations in the past with Ryan Leaf, who is now on the line with us, does a lot of talk about the Pac-12 on Sirius XM. He now joins us. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm wonderful, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
What is this like? Take us back to this moment for you. What is a guy like Joe Burrow going through as we sit here on a Tuesday before the draft on Thursday?
Well, it all depends. If the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow and his agent have entered into negotiations, which I feel like with all the controversy around whether he wanted to be there early on, that this actually would have gotten done before the draft, very similar to when Troy Aikman was drafted by the Cowboys. Their contract was done before the pick and the draft even happened. Now, they may keep it under wraps, but I would get that out there. So for me, there's still a lot of unknown. In my case, Peyton and I knew we were going first and second. It didn't matter. So there really wasn't any fear of not knowing anything. I went to bed like at 9:30 the night before. I wasn't really worried about anything leading up to it. There's a lot of unknowns in this draft, and I really think there's going to be a lot of drama. I've heard a few things recently around Joe Burrow and the possibility of him not landing in Cincinnati, which I think would be a terrible mistake. I think he's the best quarterback in this year's draft, but the likes of taking Chase Young at one, playing with Andy Dalton, that would throw things into major flux. The idea that he doesn't want to play there and he's demanding some sort of trade or something like that. There's a lot that can go into it, and I think there's going to be just a lot of drama Thursday night, having it be all in virtual draft mode. I think it's going to be fun, or at least that's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping for drama is what I'm hoping for Thursday night.
Sure. We love drama. That'd be great for what we do. So you speak pretty glowing about Joe Burrow. What, obviously, he had an historical college football season last year at LSU, but what are some of the things through your quarterback eyes that you like about Joe?
His accuracy, his poise under pressure. I mean, people in his face, people don't talk too much about in that second half, right before the half in that national championship game. He gets smoked in the ribs, and I really think he cracked a rib. He never really has spoken about it. No one really has. And he came back, and he didn't quite look the same to start the second half, and then he just gritted his teeth and fought through it and became even more accurate down the football field and closed that game out. There's something to be said about his confidence, but his ability to be humble. You saw his acceptance speech after the Heisman Trophy. I got an opportunity to spend a couple days with him before the whole pandemic played out. And a lot of times when I walk onto campuses and I speak to these football teams, these kids weren't alive when I was playing. You know, and maybe their only snippet of me is like, oh, this guy was a bust or he didn't make it in the NFL. Why would somebody listen to him? And two of the biggest stops I've made in Clemson and talking with Joe Burrow of LSU, both of them sat down, gave me their eyes, just listened to what it is. They know when they walk into a room, they want to get smarter. They believe they can learn from anybody or anything. And I got to tell you, that is really something special about Joe Burrow. He understands he's the best quarterback in this draft. He understands he's probably the best quarterback in this country. He understands he's going to be the first pick in the NFL draft. Yet he's still like a sponge and wants to learn. And he doesn't want to make the same mistakes I did, because we were in exactly the same spot about 22 years ago. And that's, for me, it meant a lot. And you know, working with Jordan Palmer leading to the draft, you watch the guys who have done that over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, really mature young men who have gone on to have really successful early careers in the NFL. And I expect the same from Joe Burrow.
Interesting. Well, I think people should take note. I would want to listen to what you, because you've been there, done it, and it didn't go smooth, and here you are on the other side. I think people should learn a lot from your story.
Well, I mean, you'd hope so, but don't forget, you know, when we are 18 to 21-year-olds, we believe that when we hear a story, we're like, oh, that's a great story, but that's never going to be me.
True.
And
yeah.
We feel like we're invincible. I know I was that guy. You know, I wasn't the guy that would have, you know, had somebody who didn't have a very successful career in the NFL come into the room, and I'd be like, I would have been exactly that way. You know, it's all about your mindset. That's why it was so, I guess, eye-opening to see the likes of Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow, arguably the two best quarterbacks in the country last year, sit up and listen and be part of the conversation, which I think is, it shows their maturity and it shows where they want to go and how great they want to be.
Good point. How about a guy that you followed a little bit more closely, even though we saw him at the beginning stages of his career playing in the SEC at Georgia, but Jacob Eason finished his career out in the Pac-12 playing at Washington. Obviously, he's a big kid. What do you, when you break down Jacob Eason, how do you look at him at the next level?
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen him stay another year. I just feel like he was a bit of an unfinished product. He still could have. What I wanted him to see is I wanted him to stay another year and dominate the Pac-12 conference. That's what I wanted to see, because going into the draft is just a bunch of ambiguity, right? He loses his job after injury to Jake Fromm. He comes up, has to sit out a whole year, and then they go 7-5 at Washington, where he, I feel, should have dominated in this conference. And it just wasn't there, and I would have liked to have seen it. Well, since he's not going to do that, you know, since he believes that his goal was to play professional football, he's going to get a chance. And I think it might work out to his benefit, because he's not going to get drafted very high. He may go in the middle to late second round, which is to a team that probably has a quarterback in place where he can sit and learn from, which I think is going to benefit him. And I really like him for the Steelers in the second round for a couple of reasons. He's very capable. He looks like Ben Roethlisberger. He's the size of Ben Roethlisberger. He signed with Ben Roethlisberger's agent. They've worked out together before this pandemic set in. If you recall, when Mason Rudolph was drafted a few years back, you know, Ben Roethlisberger was not there with like a bouquet of flowers and open arms to bring him in. And even though the Steelers have stood by him through this whole Myles Garrett fiasco, I don't think they're sold on him. And I think this could be a real solid spot for him to land, with a program and an organization that is historically spot on with everything they do. And he could be the guy for the Pittsburgh Steelers to follow in the footsteps of Ben Roethlisberger. So look for that mid to late second round, Pittsburgh Steelers and Jacob Eason.
Ryan Leaf is with us. When you look at Jalen Hurts, what do you see from an NFL quarterback perspective?
Well, I think he fits more of the mold of where the quarterback position may be going in the NFL, though you could still argue that the prototypical pocket passer is what is needed to win a Super Bowl, as we've seen the last few years. I will say this. He was one of the most highly recruited players coming out of high school. He's always the most expected of athletes in every room. The talent has always been there, but he's willing to outwork everybody, and he always has. And so whoever lands him, be ready for a quarterback controversy, for a battle, because this guy is not going to let up. He's going to work harder than anybody else, and I wouldn't be surprised if we're looking at him 2 or 3 years down the line and he fell into the footsteps of a Russell Wilson or a Dak Prescott in terms of his work ethic and him getting the starting job for a team that a lot of people probably drafted him as the backup or possibly third string guy.
So you think he has the potential to be possibly that guy in this draft, quarterback wise, that if people are down on him, he could prove them wrong?
Well, I mean, I don't know if anybody's down on him. I don't know how you could be down on Jalen Hurts. That's the thing. He's the most talented. Most of it is expected of. Yeah, he's just willing to outwork everybody else. And I think the spot for him, if I'm somebody who's wanting to draft and have a capable backup, it's the Baltimore Ravens. They could get an RG3 type in Jalen Hurts to back up Lamar Jackson, and that would be a great 1-2 punch if Jackson were ever to go down with injury. Problem with that is Jalen's not going to put up with it, right? He wants to start, and so I don't know if that'd be the best landing spot for him. But I think the Baltimore Ravens would love that opportunity to get a guy like that in place and for much cheaper than a veteran salary of RG3's moving forward.
Ryan, what's your evaluation of Jordan Love out of Utah State?
Well, you know, I really just got a chance to finally take a peek at him in the last couple of months. You know, I didn't see much of him during the regular season. I caught the Wake Forest game in week one, which was a wonderful battle back and forth. What he did under Matt Wells in 2018 was pretty special. And I think it shows everybody that having the right coach is a huge part of this. Matt Wells goes to Texas Tech. Jordan Love struggles this year, 17 interceptions, only 20-plus touchdowns. And you might think he plateaued or regressed. It really is about the fit for him. So I think this will work out well in his draft status, because a team that drafts him down the line, it's going to be about fit. It's going to be about offensive chemistry and what they do and how they coordinate an offense, I think, for Jordan Love. Because I think he's got to be in the right fit. I think you just can't put him with some team and hope he can run their offense and away he goes. It's going to be fit for him. Kind of like when Colin Kaepernick went to San Francisco early in the second round. That's the kind of thing I see. And, you know, ironically, very similar. They're both kind of from the Mountain West in that Nevada, Utah area. You know, look for him early second round, maybe middle second round, to a team that has a quarterback in place where he can learn from. Very, very similar to Colin Kaepernick, I think.
We're talking to Ryan Leaf, former NFL quarterback, breaking down some quarterback issues heading into the draft here. And so, Ryan, let's pick your brain about the adjustment for these quarterbacks when they go from college to the NFL. First, for you, what was the hardest thing that was different when you're reading NFL defenses as opposed to college?
Well, I'd like to say it wasn't the on the field stuff. It never was. It was always for me the off the field stuff. Coming from Montana and then Washington State, where we simply did not have the scrutiny, the spotlight, the magnifying glass. We had one beat reporter at both places that covered us, and I did well. You know, I was winning championships. We didn't lose. You know, I read somewhere the other day, Peyton talked about how he lost more games in his rookie year than he did in his entire high school and college combined, and how right. You're able to handle that. It was all about me learning how to deal with the exposure, the scrutiny, the pressure, and failure. That's where I struggled. If it was all about talent, I was more talented than anybody else when it came to the quarterback position. But there's a reason why there's only 32 starting quarterbacks in this world, and probably 10 of them are top tier, right? There is a limited amount of individuals who can do this. And if you are not functioning at the highest level in terms of what you do Sunday to Sunday, you're just not going to be successful. It's not in the cards unless you're willing to do everything to surrender and accept help from others. Those are big things, especially from an individual who's an alpha male, right? As a quarterback and a leader, you have to be an alpha, but still be able to walk into a locker room and look at the guy that's been there for 10 or 12 years and go, hey, how did you do this? And then follow his direction verbatim. That's difficult. And those that are able to do that and change the environment from within, those are the successful quarterbacks in this league, and they're few and far between.
Wow. So in terms of how the game is played, the speed of the defenses, the complexity of the defenses, that was not as big an issue for you, I take it.
No, and I don't think it is for a lot of these quarterbacks. These quarterbacks see everything. They've been seeing defensive schemes forever, and you can't do much in terms of what is out there defensively. You just can't. It's been 11 guys for forever. You go about some different things. I remember when zone blitzes first started to happen, you didn't expect the defensive lineman to be dropping into a zone that you normally saw that was vacated. Those things take time. Of course, there's going to be some new stuff. The speed, of course, is a factor. I mean, you know, you could pick on somebody in college where, you know, they got their nickel back in there who's their fourth or fifth best defensive back. The problem is the nickel back in the NFL is some university's best player who's been drafted. So you're going up against much better talent week in, week out. But from the football schematic side, you're used to it. You know what's going on, and you have amazing athletes at your disposal. Even if they're what people consider bad teams, and you got a player that is on a free agent deal playing wide receiver, he's still as talented as anybody you can imagine. People forget that these are the 1% of the 1% that are playing on Sundays.
Ryan, I know you got to go, but you and the family safe in these times? Everything good?
Yeah, we're doing the best we can. When it all kind of broke down, my wife and my son and I, we went out to a compound of sorts in the desert, and we've been here since March 17th. We actually haven't seen another human being since March 18th. So we're trying to do our part through this whole process, really. Just, my biggest fear is that I'm asymptomatic and I infect somebody else who has underlying health conditions and dies from this disease. I'm not so worried about me and my wife and my son. We're all young and healthy. My biggest fear is that I'm the reason why somebody else is no longer here. And I, after the last 5-6 years of my life building up humanity and making it all about other people, I would be devastated if I were complicit in something like that.
Yeah. Well, hey, continue to be safe. Thanks for joining us. Always good to talk to you, and we'll certainly talk to you down the road.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys very much. You guys be safe and enjoy this week. Bookend by The Last Dance and the NFL draft. It's the biggest sports week we'll have in a long time, I think.
No doubt about it. That is Ryan Leaf, and he certainly went through this process in 1998 when he was selected 2 overall to the Chargers. Peyton Manning, of course, going 1 to the Colts. We'll have Ben Troop at the bottom of the hour. Good to talk to Ryan Leaf. He does a lot of work in the Pac-12. You heard him talking about Jacob Eason on Sirius XM, and he does a lot of college football work every Saturday during the season. Willie, tell us about the good folks at Lee Company.
All right, let's talk Lee Company for 1 minute, and that is the phone number to always keep top of mind if you've got some maintenance issues, 615-567-1000. Hey, let's be honest, we're all spending a lot more time at home these days, and so you might be taking a little closer look at some of the finer points in your home. Maybe the pace of life is slowed down a little bit, and you're finding, these are some things here in my house we have got to get looked at, get fixed. We've been putting it off for a while. So keep Lee Company in mind. If you're in a position to do it, they're ready to help you. 615-567-1000. Or you can go online at leecompany.com and make an online appointment. And when we do get back to work, they have a maintenance crew that can come out and help general maintenance issues in your office building and workplace as well. So you can do your work, not have to worry about it, and then get on to your regular life and head home feeling good about things. The General Maintenance Department of Lee Company, 615-567-1000 or leecompany.com. Lee Company, proud sponsor, Nashville Predators.
Little Post Malone bringing us back. Good stuff from Ryan Leaf. Ben Troop at the bottom of the hour. Things on tap here in the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Looking forward to our conversation at the bottom of the hour with Ben Troop. What did you guys think of Ryan Leaf?
That was awesome. I love the honesty with him and just how he's not afraid to talk about his past at all. And I think that's beneficial for, anyone, not just athletes, but, that he is able to be so open about that because, I think he's looked at one of the biggest busts in NFL history, and that's it's tough, but as he said, a lot of it was the off the field stuff. That was a majority of it. And so I think it's refreshing to hear somebody be so honest.
If we were to do a list of guys that completely turned around their images, changed the narrative on them, isn't Ryan Leaf on that list?
Yeah, I would think so.
Oh, no doubt about it. I think he's been a tremendous spokesperson. And there have been more and more people, I think, figuring that out over time here. And you can tell that's still the most important thing on his mind. He loves to analyze players, and he gave us some great analysis on these quarterbacks that are going to get drafted. But you can tell the big picture thing for him is just this, right? And I thought that was interesting, too. I wanted to get into a little discussion to him about, what changes from the college game to the program. But you could tell his mind was, that wasn't the issue for him. It was just how you take care of yourself is where he took it, for sure. And so I think that's a great lesson for these guys.
But isn't that – I mean, that shouldn't be surprising, right? Because, I mean, I see that level all the way down in eight-year-olds. And I know it's a little bit – it's different because they're eight, and we're talking about adults in this situation. But I know that it's not just eights and adults. It's everything in between as well, right? I mean, every level you play sports, and no matter what your sport is – the competition gets better and better and better, and you realize there's more and more kids that are capable of doing the things at that level, special things at that level. And then, so, okay, then what separates everybody? Well, it's just the mindset, right? I mean, I try to coach that, but once again, it's eight-year-olds, and it's hard. You know, I try to explain to them that your attitude goes a long way. You know, don't get down on yourself. Don't, because kids at many ages, different ages, you know, they get down on themselves or they don't handle things in a certain way where sometimes the better teams, they're not more talented. They may have the same talent. They may be even a little less talented than your team, but maybe they're more mentally strong. They understand, they don't, that stuff doesn't affect them, and therefore they do more winning, right? I mean, that's kind of life. I mean, I think we see that all the time, right? I mean, these guys in powerhouse, everybody in the SEC can play. It's a lot of times just the mindset and who's more serious about it, right? Who's out partying? Who's taking it more serious? I mean, there's different levels. In his case, it was just about how to handle, you know, he had never had that, whether Montana or Washington State. Like you said, there was no scrutiny. There was one beat writer. Nobody breathing down his neck. You get drafted two overall behind Peyton, and then every throw, every interception, every loss is scrutinized, and you're asked over and over and over again. And it's just, you know, some handle it and some don't. Clearly, it was difficult for him at that time.
Yeah, and I think that's a lesson.
Of both.
Yep.
Go ahead, Willie. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I guess I got a second delay here as I go through this, but I think it's a great thing to learn because I thought maybe the biggest thing that Ryan said along those lines that is a great lesson for people going forward is when he tells his story many times to kids who never, they didn't know about his story, right? They don't remember him. They didn't watch him play. And he says, you know, the reaction he gets sometimes from some kids is, well, that's a great story, but that's not going to happen to me, right? So those are the people that are vulnerable to missing the message.
Yeah, and I think stories like his are important. I mean, we always want to talk about the, you know, the Peyton Mannings and the Bradys, the success stories, but, you know, the ones like Ryan Leaf are definitely you can learn so much from, and that's why I think it's been cool to see him turn everything around and now his media career. And you mentioned, Darren, you know, the conversations you guys have had with him over the years, and it was my first time being able to talk to him, and it's just it's very cool to hear that, and I think that's going to be beneficial to some of these guys, not just quarterbacks, but any player going into the league. Of there are a lot of things that you have to take account for.
Well, I think it was interesting that he talked about his conversations with Joe Burrow, how Joe Burrow was one of those guys that wanted to listen, right, that wanted to ask questions. I mean, Willie, how many times have we done this over the years of going and speaking to young people at schools, right, or in classes? And you know that there's always a couple of kids that stand out, right, always, because they're inquisitive. They want to know more. They're listening. They're all about it. And then there's other kids, for whatever reason, you know, they could really care less what you're saying. They're not really listening or paying attention. Maybe it's, you know, well, like I said, everybody's got their reason. Maybe it was a bad day. Maybe they, whatever. But, you know, we've all run into that where there's a couple that will really stand out and ask a bunch of questions and, you know, really want to talk to you and really want to hear about your journey or how you got to this point or about the business or what have you. And that's just life, and these guys are no different. So remember all the stories that we talk about in the NFL, okay, where they lose their money or these things happen off the field, they all get the same speech when they're rookies, right? It's not like they don't get the speech. All the teams do this. They gather them in a room, and they have a person or people come talk to them, and some listen and some don't, right? That's how it works.
Yep. It's like the Herm Edwards speech.
Wasn't Nick Saban one of the first to bring him in to speak to his group?
I think that sounds right. Yeah. I think that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's...
And Nick Saban's very good about doing that, by the way. I mean, seen it, right? He's had Kobe Bryant. He's brought a lot of people in to speak to his teams over the years.
Yeah, and I think that's where I really applaud Ryan Leaf, is he's embraced that that can be his way of paying it forward and giving back, is, you know, using his story to help mold the future with some of these players. But, you know, something else that he brought up, and then, you know, with the Peyton Manning discussion that we had with Joe Burrow, and Ryan and I discussed this on the rundown, is these players that have done a lot of winning in their life, they haven't lost a lot. I think that's the hardest part for these guys when they take the next step of how do they handle losing? Do they know how to lose? Can they grow from that? Because you see guys that get to the NFL and they lose a lot, especially early on, and it just wrecks their career, wrecks their confidence, and they never live up to their potential. And then there are the ones like a Peyton Manning that they lost a lot the rookie year. They got better from it and had Hall of Fame careers. Can Joe Burrow, can Tua, you know, these other quarterbacks, because it's so hard playing that position, can they embrace or learn from losing when they've been so used to winning their entire life? That's what I want to see.
We'll come back. We'll talk to former Titans tight end Ben Troop, who was drafted in the second round by the Titans back in the 2004 draft. We will do that next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, going along with the theme today, Ben Troop has been asked to be moved about 10, 15 minutes later. So we will talk to him at 12:45. So that's just keeping with the theme today.
At least everybody's doing it.
Let's all do it in one day. That's fine. I'd rather do it in one day than spread it out, you know, once every day of the week.
Look, I'll say this, and you know, knock on wood, you kind of brought it up earlier, though. Considering all the setup that we have of being in three different locations and everything that has gone into this through this time, I mean, we've had killer guests, and kudos to Marquise and Elijah and Willie and you and everybody that's contributed to help make this happen. I'm surprised that we haven't had more hoops to jump through than we have. So we've been very lucky in that sense. So it is what it is.
We have indeed. For sure. What is this about Oliver Luck? We've got some, according to Darren Revelle on Twitter, we've got some former XFL commissioner Oliver Luck. He's suing your boy, Chase.
Yes, he is. I saw that. And listen, it's ironic because the other day I actually watched, and I had seen it when it first came out, but I watched This Was the XFL, the 30 for 30. We're getting some great material for the follow-up, for the sequel, with part two. So apparently, yeah, Oliver Luck suing Vince McMahon. Now that the league apparently is done, sources say Luck received a contract in between 20 to 25 million over 5 years. The contract stipulated he'd be due the remaining balance if terminated without cause. So he's trying to get his money, it would appear. And he's probably, I mean, if I had to guess, if the contract says it, he will get that. So this is blown up. And I mean, Vince McMahon's been in the news a lot the last few weeks with both the XFL essentially folding and then letting go of a ton of people that had worked for World Wrestling Entertainment for a long time. So this is just not looking good for Vinnie Mac.
I think that was the intriguing part about the XFL. It was so easy to dismiss all these football leagues because they had all been failing. But when you get Oliver Luck to leave, I mean, he's had some really important and good jobs along the way, right?
Yep.
He's a smart guy. To leave that and to go, I mean, he's been what? What is Oliver Luck? He's been the what? AD at West Virginia.
He's on the college football playoff committee.
He's, I mean, Wasn't he running NFL Europe back in the day? Yep. Wasn't he the commissioner? I mean, he's had some really big-time jobs, and it's like, okay, he's leaving this to go work for the XFL and Vince McMahon. Okay. Then you get, you know, Bob Stoops, and it's like, whoa. You know, Steve Spurrier, whoa. He's getting some of these huge names, and you're thinking, okay, there's something they know that we don't know. Like, what – these people typically do not sign up for things that they think is going to have a very, very quick or short shelf life. But yet, here we are, and the XFL has filed for bankruptcy. And
I don't understand this either, because Vince has money. They have money. WWE has money. Like, there's reports that Bob Stoops is owed like $1 million. I mean, Mark Trestman's listed here. And granted, the other coaches weren't making near what Bob's – or. They weren't making over $1 million like Bob Stoops. And now you have Oliver Luck suing. I don't understand. I don't get it. They have the
according to the article, Luck is suing because according to his contract, you know, unless he was fired for cause, he was going to be owed the money. Apparently, that's what they negotiated. Right. I don't know how it works when a league goes bankrupt. Right? How does that work with?
I wouldn't say that's for cause. That's just that the league went belly up. So I think you have to pay him.
Well, that's what my question is. In other circumstances, you know, I'm sure players didn't get a full paycheck for the entire season when the league went belly up. That was it. Like in that American League that was going on last year, right. There was some really sad stories of guys just getting left high and dry in the middle of, you know, rehab and things like that, or, you know, rehab and injuries and stuff, and that was it. You know, grab your stuff, it's over.
Well, if the league is filed for bankruptcy, they're not going to get paid.
Right.
Yeah.
Which that raises the question for me, and I don't know what you guys think. Did it fail because of COVID-19 cutting the season short, or was it going to fail anyway? Because it was, I mean, now they're filing for bankruptcy. And I feel like if you're starting a new league, you almost have to go in understanding you're going to operate at a loss at least for, you know, a couple of years. But and again, Vince McMahon, WWE. I feel like they have the capital that they could do that, but now this company's filing for bankruptcy, or has filed.
It's unbelievable. So it's just now it's going to be really, as we've talked about, when this news first broke, it's going to be really hard if for some reason somebody else wants to give this a go. Here in the very, very near future, I think it's just going to be really, really hard for anybody to give it any run until it establishes itself, till it has any shelf life at all, right? I mean, yeah. Would you give it a time of day? If, let's say, next spring or whatever, next summer in 2021, there's a new and it's got all these nice names and coaches, would we want to talk about it? Would we really believe that that would be worthy of – any discussion at all?
The only chance I would give it is if it is owned and operated by the National Football League. I'd pay attention then.
Yep.
Developmental.
Yep. I mean, that's what they would have to do. That it's got to be NFL. I mean, they at least have to have a part of it. I mean, you can have other investors, whatever, you know. But the NFL has to operate it. I mean, it has to be basically the developmental league, Willie, like you said, of the NFL. That's the only way I'm going to pay attention.
So let's wrap this up by asking this question. And I'm not obviously a lawyer or have no training with a lawyer, but it's an interesting article because it basically asks this question. All right, Oliver Luck is suing Vince McMahon. He's got a contract that says I get paid even if I'm not fired for cause. Or, you know, unless I'm fired for cause, I get the money. The league goes belly up. COVID-19, et cetera. Does he have a case? Should he get paid? Does Vince McMahon owe him money?
That's a fair question. I don't know what it says in the contract. You would think with a league like this that there's some verbiage in there that, you know, if the league does not operate, you know, for X amount of years or, again, I'm not a lawyer, but I would think that would have had to have been discussed or at least have it in the contract.
Once again, how do you have a foolproof system that says I'm going to get paid even if the league files for bankruptcy. Typically, does anybody get paid when you know, that's the whole point, right? I mean, I don't know. I'm not a bankruptcy attorney. I've never been in bankruptcy court. I don't understand a lot of that. But there's a reason why Vince McMahon is filing. He's filing bankruptcy for that particular business or entity so he can get out from underneath those bills, right? That's the whole point. That's why.
Right, but there's a process that you have to, like Chase said, he's got money, right?
Vince is a
billionaire. How does that work? Don't you get made whole if you can? I don't know what all the – fortunately, I've never had to go through anything like that, but I do wonder how that works. I mean, obviously, Oliver Luck is going to some trouble to say, you know, I need to get paid here. But apparently the contract was not with Vince McMahon personally. It was with the league. So that's where the legalese is going to come in.
Which is – so Vince founded a company called Alpha – I think it was Alpha Media or something like that. He founded that to run the XFL, so it was separate from WWE.
Yep, that sounds right. All right, we will come back and finish up the third hour with Ben Troop. We do that on the other side, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. An homage to Prince. 4 years ago today, we lost Prince. Remember that day vividly on the show. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We always like when we catch up with Ben Troop, former Titans tight end, and he is on the line with us now, part of Pigskin Radio. Ben, how you doing? Good afternoon.
And thanks for having me. Looking forward to chatting with you guys.
So how have things been the last 6 weeks in your world?
I got a different appreciation for these teachers, man. You know, for all the complaining we be doing about, you know, I mean, daddy ain't as smart as I thought I was. I mean, I'm happy that don't nobody get to see me trying to do this algebra or whatever. You know, my kid's 8. I was like, daddy, what is this? I'm like, you better email your teacher. It's going to get rough around here.
So you have an 8-year-old son or daughter?
I have a 8-year-old daughter, and you know, the thing about it is I mean, most of the stuff she give me, I said, oh yeah, daddy can do that. And then she said, well, daddy, with these compound fractions, I said, daddy don't do fractions, daddy don't do decimals, and that seems to be all you doing. So let me just call your teacher personally. I can't do this emailing back and forth. I can't wait.
I feel your pain. I have an 8-year-old son, so I've been there with you on that. Can you talk to us about? Well, let's just start with the draft here. Before I get into that question. So what was 2004 like for you? The Titans drafted you in the second round. What was the whole process like for you leading up to the draft and then going through it?
It was extremely humbling because, you know, obviously it's not as much access like these, like you have with these young men now. But, you know, me being 21 years old and naive, I was the first of my kind for everything. You know, I take it all the way back to recruiting, going to the University of Florida. I didn't come from a high school that had a bunch of recruits. So me, Carlos Rogers that went to Auburn, and Isaac West that went to Furman, we were the first of our kind. So when the draft came, I really took my advice from my agent, Joel Siegel. I mean, he told me I would go between pick 20 and 40. And all I heard was the 20. Obviously, I didn't hear the 40 part. But It was exciting, but it was still one of those. You're living in an unknown type place, man, because there's no one like you. I'm from the small town of Swainsboro, Georgia, so it's not as if we're putting out NFL talent year in and year out. But I enjoyed it. But looking back on it, it was still a lot of unknown because until you hear that phone ring, man, it's a nervous place to be in.
I want to know, I think you're the perfect guy to ask this because when you came in, Frank Wycheck's career had just ended here, and Frank Wycheck obviously was a great tight end in this market and for the organization, and you had to replace him. Jonnu Smith is going through the same thing, where Delanie Walker has been a great tight end in this market for a long time, and now Jonnu Smith is going to move into that role. What is it like whenever you move into that role, whenever you've had somebody that you know, you're now in the place of that left quite the mark in the organization and with the fan base?
I think the biggest thing is just trying to create your own identity. That was one of the first questions I got with my introductory press conference, and being you here to replace Frank Wycheck. And the funny thing about it, the first tight end I met when I came into the facility was Aaron Kinney. I didn't meet Frank Wycheck until I went on a Titans caravan, and he was in a limo where I think we was headed to Memphis or something like that. But I would just tell John, understand, I can't do what Frank Wycheck did. Just like John, he can't do, you know, what Delaney did. You got to create your own identity, but use what these people taught you, man. I mean, use what you can learn from an Aaron Kinney, from a Delaney Walker. But understand that, you know, the thing about this Titans. I mean, I didn't think I would see a Titan as good as Frank Wycheck. That Delaney Walker comes in, so big shoes to fill. But understand, man, you know, just walk on your own and just enjoy the process.
I know you're down in Georgia, and I know we've talked to you in the past. I don't know how much you actually get to watch of the Titans. I know the Titans and Falcons played last year, but if you have put your eyes on Jonnu Smith a little bit through your tight end eyes, what do you see out of him?
Oh, man, I mean, he can do it all. I mean, the thing about Jonnu, man, I mean, they're very athletic after the catch. I mean, the thing is, most of the time when you see screens thrown, you see them thrown to a receiver, and the tight ends are the one blocking. You got A.J. Brown and those guys. They're out there blocking for Jonnu. I think, you know, I remember him coming out of college and understanding that this guy has tremendous ability, and he's very fluid as an athlete. The thing about him is, I mean, no waste of motion with everything he does, but, you know, just have to become a complete tight end. I mean, obviously you're going to have to block, for that mutant back there, at that running back, you know, with Derrick Henry, but if he can just add some little nuances to his game, I mean, he don't need my help, man. This young man, you know, I mean, as they say, he went to the man pool and he dove in.
We're talking to Ben Troop, former Titans tight end, now a guy that breaks down a lot of things football-wise from where he sits, and we always enjoy getting some football knowledge from him. We've talked to him many times over at SEC Media Days. We talked to him after the draft last year in Nashville. So, Ben, as you break down the draft with your colleagues right now, what do you think, what's the biggest storyline in your mind that you're most curious to see in this first round?
Oh, man, I'm really, really serious to see how many quarterbacks going to go in the first round. For some reason, with all, you know, obviously Joe Burrow is going to go number one, and then you hear about, you know, obviously Tua and Herbert and these guys. I want to see, if somebody, going to take a risk on a guy like Jalen Hurts. Obviously, Jordan Love and those guys, because we get so caught up in the Derrick Browns of the world, and you got a plethora of receivers. But I want to see how many quarterbacks are really going to go, because as you guys know, I mean, you know, when it comes to quarterback playing in the NFL, you got elite play, and it's a huge drop-off. Doesn't mean those other guys can't play, but everybody's searching for that next great quarterback. And I'm really curious to see how many guys will end up going in the first round, because I can't even deal with these mock drafts at this point.
I don't think any of us can. We're worn out from mock drafts by this time for sure. But, Ben, you know this. Every national show you turn on is discussing the strategy based on the circumstances with the injury, the environment we're in, with the inability to get all the information that like with Tua. So where do you see Tua going? If you were, say, the Dolphins, would you go after him, make sure you got him? How do you feel about him going forward?
Oh, I feel great about him. I understand that, the injury situation, is always going to be on everybody's mind. But when it comes to injury, it's not a matter of if, but when. Everybody's going to get injured. And the thing about Tua, yes, I mean, he's not the biggest guy, but the whole thing about it is this. I mean, I go back to Jake Locker when he went to the Titans. I mean, if you're going to drop in the draft and you're only dropping from 1 to 5, that just shows you the type of talent Tua has. I like Joe Burrow, but Tua is the best quarterback in the draft. I mean, Joe Burrow had a season of the ages, but Tua is about as rock solid as a gig. You're going to have to get him, and he's not going to play right away, obviously, but I feel great about Tua, man. I mean, I don't believe in sure things when it comes to the NFL. It is a crapshoot, but if Tua Tagovailoa can't help your organization and you draft him in the top 10, I mean, I would question you as a GM, and I would definitely question your scouts.
Ben Troop is with us, former Titans tight end, Florida tight end, as well. How much, just in general, have you seen that tight end position change since you played?
Oh, man, it's become it's It's what the tight end for the offense is kind of what the outside linebacker did for defense. It's the new edge position. I mean, obviously, you know, I played with Antonio Gates and Tony Gonzalez, but then this guy named Gronk came along and he took it to another level. Then you got Travis Kelce, George Kittle, and you know what I'm saying, Zach Ertz and those guys. I think it's getting back to, you know, you really can run your offense, your passing game through these guys. And obviously these guys are built to go out there and, you know, catch the football when you look at their makeup. But I love it. I love the fact that, I mean, Thaddeus Moss kind of like the best story, one of the best stories. I mean, obviously the son of Randy Moss, he goes, well, listen, I got to live in these shoes. The last thing I want to do is play receiver. Let me put on, you know, let me eat a couple more hamburgers, man, to get up to 250 and play tight end. So but I'm loving it, though. I'm loving it for these guys coming into the league. I'm loving the direction these guys currently in the league are taking it, and I'm looking to see these guys take it to an even higher level.
Do you think that it's essentially two positions in one, the blocking tight end, the receiving tight end, and they're not really, you can't really do both, or you can do both, but you're not really seeing most guys do both. You just kind of have one that's the receiving tight end and one's the blocking tight end.
It used to be like that. And I think three guys that really helped the position, like kind of, you know, kind of show that you could have three guys, was back when Philadelphia did win the Super Bowl, when they had Brent Celek, you know, they had Ertz, they had Trey Burton, and they kind of treat the tight end position how they do running backs, man. You're doing it by committee, but you don't want to be a one-trick pony. You don't want to be that guy that, like, I love Jimmy Graham. I love him as a tight end, but when he played for New Orleans, they're either running the ball away from him, or they throwing the football. And that, you know, you don't want to tip off your offensive game plan. I think these guys are taking pride. The best all-around tight end in the league is George Kittle. The best tight end in the league is Travis Kelce. And George Kittle, he can do it all. And you actually play better as a receiver, man. When you actually block better, it actually makes you play better as a whole. I think these guys are adopting more of a blocking mentality because we know they want to get out there and catch the rock.
When you hear all the conversation with college football and potentially either not playing on time or not having fans, potentially playing two seasons in the calendar year of 2021, how do you think all that would work, or do you think it would work?
I don't think it would work for the simple fact that, you know, it's easy to make decisions when you ain't got to be the one implementing it. I mean, we're talking about 17 to 24-year-olds that are still trying to find their way in life, let alone play football. And I understand football runs America. It's definitely college football, but you don't put that much on a young man who's just trying to figure out life. And the whole thing about it is I understand that football runs us, and this is what we love. But if you can't find a way to get it done without putting these young men's life at risk and their health at risk, don't do it. I'm not going to like it if it goes away for 1 year, but if it means the betterment and, you know, healthy and safety of these young men, I'm all for it, because, you know, you can't look at it because it's not me, they'll be fine. I don't appreciate what the coach, you know, Oklahoma State said when he said these guys are young. When you just implement the plays, they have to go out and execute it, find a way to get it done, keep these guys out of harm's way.
Last thing, Ben, you played with Brad Hopkins, B-Hop, at the end of his career. Have you got a chance to look at his kid, Bryson, out of Purdue? And as a tight end, what do you make of him?
You know what's funny? I mean, I found myself watching more Iowa football because I knew where B-Hop's son played. I like it, man. I think, I mean, obviously he's still going to be a project. He's going to have to be a guy that's going to have to really, really be coached. He's going to have to be able to take coaching, really take criticism. But, I mean, obviously, I mean, he got the bloodline. You know, and one thing about B-Hop, man, you guys know, man, B-Hop was an athlete. He didn't mind telling you, I just play tackle now. I mean, I'm an athlete out here. And obviously, you know, his son obviously got that bloodline. But I like what I see from him. I think if a team does take a chance on him, man, I definitely think he'll be a guy kind of like John Lewis Smith, man. You come in, learn under a veteran tight end, like just like I had to do when I came in and learn under Aaron Kinney. I think you'll be just fine.
Well, good stuff. Ben, really appreciate the visit. As always, continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Appreciate it.
All right, that is Ben Troop, former Titans tight end. They drafted him in the second round back in the 2004 draft, and he talks a lot of college football these days, and we do appreciate him joining us. When we come back, we'll start the final hour. Willie got a chance to catch up with Predators' Victor Arvidsson. We will hear that conversation and discuss some things we hear in that to kick off the final hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.